KA19.
4, 3.
Where we kick ass.
2, 1.
Hey Sequoia, I'm Mamie Bain with Daya Carolyn, and we're your host today for our first podcast of the year. I'm excited, but really nervous since I've never done this before. How are you, Daya?
I'm doing amazing, Mamie. I'm so excited to bring back our KA19 podcast. I've got to be honest, I'm a little nervous too, but I think we're going to be all good. We have some great guests lined up, starting with today. In the studio, we have Debbie Castro, a dispatch supervisor from the Ventura County Sheriff's Department. Thank you for joining us, Debbie.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here with you guys.
So before we get started with questions and getting to know more about being a dispatcher, can you tell us a little about yourself?
Sure. I was born and raised in Ventura County, lived here all my life. Currently, I live in the city of Fillmore with my husband of 30 years. Our kids are all four-legged, so that makes things pretty easy for us. We have two dogs, cat. I have family that lives around the area and love it here in Ventura County.
That's so nice. So let's jump in. When did you decide you wanted to be a dispatcher? Was there anything to prompt you to follow this line of work? In other words, how did you get started?
Well, I actually went to school and started out as a medical transcriptionist and was a medical transcriptionist for 16 years until they decided that that line of work could be sent out to other countries. So they started outsourcing that position. I figured I needed to find a job that was going to stay here and couldn't be outsourced. I didn't want to have to start over, but I did. Law enforcement was in my background. My father was a police officer back in the 60s. And so it was kind of in my blood. It was something that was always in the back of my mind. We always had a scanner at our house. We always listened to radio from the fire department and the police department. And so I thought, well, this might be a good thing. So I started applying for dispatchers in the area with Highway Patrol, smaller police agencies, and with the Ventura County Sheriff's Office. I had some friends in the Sheriff's Department, so I thought it would be a good fit.
I imagine there's some kind of special training or even school program that is required to be a dispatcher. Can you tell us some things that you have to do to become one?
Sure. There's really not any programs or classes that you can take through colleges or where you can focus on. If you want to be a nurse, you can go to a nursing program. There's not really anything for dispatching. What you can do, one of the things is maybe take criminal law classes, because we have to know a lot about law enforcement, about the laws, the procedures, penal codes, traffic violations, things like that. So we need to be aware of that. One of the things that you can do also is what I suggest is really a need for it is typing skills. Not texting, but typing. Because we're on basically typewriters or computers all day. So the faster you type, the better you are at the position. Because people are talking to you all the time, whether it be on a phone call or a radio, you're constantly having to enter the information into the system. So if you can type without even having to think about it, it's just second nature. It makes it a lot easier for everything else. We also train everybody that comes in. So we go through a 6-month to 1-year program of training you. So we will teach you everything you need to know. Now, a lot of people can't make it through the training process. Maybe they decide it's not for them, so they don't make it through. But we will train you on everything that you need to know.
Wow. So other than that training, is there like a certain type of personality or personal traits that you need?
Really, basically, it's life experience, customer service, making sure that the customer is always right. Always right. And you want to give the best customer service that you can. When people call 911, they're usually calling because they're having a bad day. Either they've been a victim of a crime or they've witnessed something, they've seen something. So it's not actually comfortable for them to be calling us. So we want to make them as comfortable as possible and be able to help them in any way we can. One great trait to have is multitasking. Can you listen and type at the same time? Typing everything in, talking at the same time that you're typing or listening, it's that's a great skill to have. You have to be a multitasker. And the one thing, most women are great multitaskers. Men have to work at it a little bit more. And it's just, that's just the nature of it all.
Wow, that's amazing. So I have to ask, with TV shows and movies like 911, do they accurately represent what you do in a day-to-day basis of being a dispatcher?
Not really. I've watched some of those shows. If any of you have seen the movie The Call, I think it's an older movie with, I forget her name, who's ever in it, who does that. And they get a little too involved in some of the things. It's not as glamorous as that. There's a lot of times where there's downtime. There's not the going 100 miles an hour every minute. There's also, they make it a little bit more glamorous where you just answer and then they get involved in it. They may even go out on scene of something where they follow up on those types of things. Once we're done with the call, we're done with it. Then we go on to the next call. You may want an answer to it and find out what was really going on. And sometimes you don't get that because it gets out, goes out to the deputies, and we don't even know sometimes what's happened. It just goes, you move on to the next one. So it's not really what the movies and the TV shows show you, unfortunately. Some of them have a little, you know, they'll come and they'll interview dispatch centers and get a story from you. And so some of the stuff is true. Some of the calls that they get is actually where a 911 center had received that call.
Wow. So, yeah, it, like, doesn't seem like it's a rush, rush, rush in the movies, but it still seems kind of rushed a little.
Yeah. 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 Oh, yeah, it is. It can be sometimes. And then other times at 3 o'clock in the morning, you get one call, and then you wait for the next one at 4 o'clock in the morning because we're 12-and-a-half-hour shifts and work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Wow. We're always there.
That's
always
crazy.
Wow. So did you become a dispatch supervisor right away, or did you have to, like, be out in the field or something like that?
I actually worked for 15 years as a dispatcher before I became a supervisor. So I've been a supervisor now for about 3.5 to 4 years. And you really have to take in everything, learn from it. Even when you're off training your first year or so, you're not comfortable in the position, probably for another 2 to 5 years. It takes 5 years for you to be a really good dispatcher or a great dispatcher. And from there, if you want to go and apply and become a supervisor, you can do that.
That makes sense because, like, practice makes perfect.
Exactly.
Have you ever received a prank call? Like, what do you do to, like, make sure that it is a prank call, and what are the procedures after that?
We have to take every call seriously. And sometimes you hear a call and you just can't believe that they're calling about something. Maybe they're calling about a raccoon in their shed. And it's not really an emergency, but it's an emergency to them. They may be making up stuff. They'll call who knows what. They could be saying anything. But we have to take every call that serious. If they say they're in a trunk of a car, we have to take that seriously. So we can't really determine on our end if it is a prank. We have to put it all in. We get all as much information as we can, the location, which is the most important thing, so we can send units out to that location, and then they can investigate from there. There's a lot of times that we take it so seriously, we think, oh my gosh, this person was really kidnapped and taken in a trunk of a car somewhere. And come to find out, they made it all up. But we don't know that because we're only talking to them. We can only go by what we hear over the phone. So the deputies have to go out and contact that person. So we don't really determine if it is or not. We just take every call as seriously as we can.
So, like, even if it's, like, something really stupid, you still have to take it seriously?
Absolutely. Yeah. We may think it's silly or stupid, but they don't. So, you know, we have to put it in. They can sometimes people will call 911 a lot, and they don't really have an emergency. Some of those are the pranks where they just keep calling and they just scream. It could be a child or something, and those are the ones that are kind of the pranks that we go, okay, gotta stop doing that.
And then besides dealing with those calls, are you responsible for anything else when you're on shift?
As a supervisor, I have to watch all the calls that are coming in. I have to make sure my dispatchers, which are usually 4 to 6 dispatchers on duty, that they're doing everything as best they can, that they're answering the calls as quickly as possible, handling the calls properly, giving good customer service, not being rude. We also have to monitor the radio. So taking the 911 calls is not the only thing, but we also are on the radio. We're a lifeline for all our deputies out there, and all they have is a radio to us, telling us that they've pulled over a vehicle. So we're making sure we get the proper help to them. Maybe they've pulled over a vehicle that has occupants that have guns in the car. So we have to make sure that they get the help they need as soon as they can. If they come over the air, there's somebody with a gun or a knife somewhere on the street. They give us the information, the description of the person. We make sure they get help to them, whether it be medical or more deputies out there. So we're their lifeline. So we have to be in constant communication with them. So I'm supervising all of that that's going on.
Well, that sounds like very busy. So you're always on your toes, basically.
You have to be. You could get a call of your life at 7 in the morning. It could be who knows what. We've had that happen where 7 o'clock in the morning, you have to be prepared for it. 3 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. You never know what you're going to get on that other side. It could be a real, you know, a real critical incident, or not so much, but you always have to be prepared. You can't come in, I'm kind of sleepy this morning. It's only 7 o'clock, I'm sleepy, let me have my coffee. But you have to be ready to answer every call and give 100% every minute.
So I imagine with all those types of calls that you receive, each one requires different ways to help. What do you do when you get a call from like an unresponsive caller?
So unresponsive, where they're not answering?
Like they're not answering, like maybe something happened so they're unable to answer, or okay. Like, I don't know, just any way that they can't respond.
Yeah, we get quite a few calls that may be a medical call. Now, medical calls are handled by the Ventura County Fire Department, and they have their policies and procedures that they have to follow. So once we determine it's a medical call, we transfer it to County Fire. And which it goes through within seconds. They can talk to somebody over there who can give them help. If they're not even answering and they call 911, we send help. One of the things that we do, if you're on a landline phone, and most people don't have landline phones anymore, everything is a cell phone. So landline phones will give us the exact location where they are. It's going to come back to that address. So if we get a call, maybe we hear somebody having trouble breathing. We're going to put a call in immediately to that location. We have the technology that shows that, so we send help immediately. We may send the fire department as well, get them going along with us, but we'll send police. Maybe they can't talk because they've been kidnapped or they've been taken hostage and they have their mouth taped up or something and they can't talk, but they were able to hit 911. We're going to send help no matter what. Now, if you're on a cell phone, everybody has cell phones, if they can't talk on the cell phone, if we hear something that sounds like it sounds out of the ordinary, we have to determine that it sounds out of the ordinary, and we have to send them help. Now, that's not going to tell us exactly where they are, but technology with cell phones now will give us a pretty good location, and we have some systems in our computers that we can almost pinpoint. We can go back, and we can get pretty close. If you're calling from the school, we may be able to get that it's around here somewhere, but maybe we don't know what classroom it's in. But at least we can get somebody to this area and find out if there's a real emergency going on.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, and it seems really helpful.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
So what do you consider to be the most common emergency or non-emergency call that you get?
Probably the most common emergencies, and can be also non-emergencies too, are the 911 hangups. So we have to respond to any 911 hangups that are on a landline phone. We have to also listen if it's on a cell phone. So those can be great emergencies. One of the bigger emergencies are their domestics. They can't talk. Their spouse is there, their boyfriend or girlfriend. So they can't talk to us and tell us really what's going on. So we have to send somebody to that. Maybe we get their address. Maybe they say, you've probably heard this story where somebody calls and says they're ordering a pizza.
Yeah.
Everybody's heard that story. Well, it's absolutely true. somebody might call and say, hey, I need to order a pizza. Well, first of all, we're going to say, hey, this is 911. But then the dispatchers are trained to kind of listen and go, wait a minute. Sounds like there's something more going on here, so that we do send them help, so we can get their address and send help. A lot of times, though, those 911 hangups are people who have it in their pocket and they hit 911. We've all heard that go on. Somebody in a school is calling 911. We get them all the time. So we can kind of hear what's going on in the background, say if somebody in this classroom dials 911. And we maybe will hear talking or students talking, and we go, well, this is an emergency. So we probably can let it go. But people hit 911 on their phones all the time, all the time, all day long, all night long. We get, that's one of the main things that we get that takes up of a lot of our time, is having to look into those and investigate and see if there's really an emergency going on. Yeah. But again, that can be a non-emergency as well.
My friend just got a new phone, and it constantly accidentally calls 911 because it's the wrong kind of phone case. And all the time, she won't notice it till it starts ringing, and she has to, like, turn it off.
And we call her back, and we make sure she's not having an emergency. Yeah, the new Apple phones and the watches will dial 911 all the time. They have a button on them or something. I don't have one, so I don't know how it works. But apparently, if you have an Apple Watch, it really dials 911 pretty fast, so... People need to know how to use them. And we'll usually tell them, well, they don't know how to turn their emergency button off. Call the carrier, call your whoever's Apple, whoever it is, AT&T, and they'll probably explain it to you better than we can.
So I don't know if each shift contains, like, calls all the time, but, like, what do you do around, like, where you work when there's, like, not a call going on?
Good question. We have a lot of times, so our slower time is usually... in the nighttime, from midnight until 6 in the morning. That's when we go down to a lower staffing, where we only have 4 people on duty and a supervisor. We always have a watch commander there as well. So we have televisions up in our center. Most of the time we have them on news, just because sometimes the news can get information faster than we can. So if something's going on, we can see on the news and go to that. We can have a show kind of playing in the background. We usually don't have the volume up, but we have it going on. People can read if there's nothing going on. Because one thing about this job, it's busy, it's stressful, it's go, 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 100 miles an hour at times. But at times, you do have downtime where nothing's happening, where you're waiting for that call to come in. So people can read. People can do training exercises. We have a lot of training all the time that we have to keep up on. So they can do the training on their computer. They can read. Some people can crochet if they wanted to. They can do puzzles, little things just to keep the mind going. You want to keep the mind going. We can't sleep. We don't go to sleep. We're up the entire shift. If you're working a 12.5-hour shift, you're up for 12.5 hours.
Yeah.
So you find little things to do. We have discussions, meetings, and training things, exercises, and stuff like that. So sometimes it goes a little slow during the night, but... we find our way to get through it.
So what do you do during a call when someone's panicking? And is there a method you use to calm them down and keep yourself calm?
One thing to keep ourselves calm, and we tell everybody, we have to breathe. Take a breath. And we tell the callers as well, take a breath, so we can get the information. It depends on who it is, who you're talking to. You might be talking to a small child, maybe a 5-year-old, who's just, they can't calm down. So you kind of have to drop the level in your voice and talk to them. You're talking to a kid, so you need to go into their language. They may not understand everything that's, you know, real complicated wording, things like that. So you really have to go down to their level to talk to them. Or maybe it's an elderly person who can't hear. So you have to raise your voice, talk to them a little louder. If somebody's really panicking, you just have to kind of reel them in. Say their name. The best thing to do is get their name. So then I could say, Susan. And then that kind of, you know, brings them to attention. You know, if they're calling on somebody's having a heart attack in their house and they can't say anything and they're just going a mile a minute, you have to reel them in. Hey, what's your name? Change the questioning. You have to change questioning. And you have to try to just get them to calm down a little bit, not take everything so seriously for you. I can't go and get upset after every single call. I just have to know I need to help them. So I kind of reel them in, get their name, and then I can get their attention a little bit more. I can keep going back to them using their name. Mm-hmm. So that's a really good technique to use when you're trying to calm somebody down. Ask a different question, because you'll ask them their address. They won't know their address. They can't even say it. They're so panicked, they can't say anything. So you kind of have to change the questioning.
Yeah, that makes sense for people who are like on the younger end and have a hard time remembering stuff.
Absolutely.
So we've been talking about 911 emergencies, but do you handle other calls that are classified as non-emergencies?
That's probably a big majority of our calls, especially during day shift. So everybody calls 8 to 5. Our phones are really busy during the day. We take calls of anything you could imagine, from a barking dog to somebody broke my sprinkler outside in my, you know, in my backyard last night. Somebody came in my yard, trespassing calls. We also have to refer callers to other parts of the agency. Maybe they're calling about a ticket they got, so they want to talk to courts. That comes through us because we have business lines that we answer and the emergency lines, but we have to answer all the business lines. So we have to refer them and know where to refer them. So we have to refer them to the courts so they can talk to the DA if they need to. We can refer them to Child Protective Services if they want to report something to them. We refer them to other agencies if it's not in our county area. They'll ask about it. They ask advice on child custody issues, or their kids don't want to go to school. We have to handle those types of things. We help them as much as we can. Again, customer service, Sheriff's Department will respond to everything. If the parents want a deputy to come out and talk to their child about going to school, we'll come out and do that. It's not one of the favorite things. It's not always criminal. It's not always a bank robbery or people fighting. It's a lot of other little things like that that we need to send people out to talk to. A lot of check the well-beings, where people are concerned about somebody walking down the street and they just don't think it looks right, so we go out and check on them. Yeah. So there's a ton of calls that we get regularly, daily, hundreds.
That makes sense. Yeah. How do you and your colleagues take care of yourself after like an emotionally stressful day?
One of the best ways to do that is share the information with each other. We talk to each other. We talk about an incident if it's very critical, and get all that out. Don't leave it bottled up inside. If you're upset about something, you need to talk to everybody who also knows how to deal with it or has experienced it. Sometimes you'll go home to your family members and they don't get it. They don't understand. They'll say, oh, okay, what happened? Oh, that was exciting. Well, maybe it wasn't very exciting. Maybe it was pretty stressful for you, but they don't understand that. So talking about it is the best thing. One of the things that I like to do every night I go home, I'm going to go home and take my dogs for a walk. It's just walking or exercising is very, relieves some of the stress there. That's one of the better things to do. But sharing the information with everybody is great. If you can talk to your family members understand. I have a brother who was in law enforcement, so he totally understands. I can go and talk to him and tell him anything that I can't really tell my husband, because my husband doesn't understand it. Yeah. So we find ways, calming ways.
Yeah.
So what would be some advice you would give to someone who wants to become a dispatcher?
I would talk to people who are dispatchers, talk to law enforcement, look into law enforcement ideas. There's been people who've wanted to become police officers and then realize they get out there and they say, hey, this isn't what I want to do, but I want to be in law enforcement. Yeah. So they figure dispatching is the next best thing. We have a couple people that were going to be officers, and it just didn't work out for them. Either a medical reason, they've been injured, so they come and become a dispatcher. So it's really close to the action. It's about as close as you can get without being out there, without having to have the gun in your hand, things like that. So I would look into going to every agency, start listening to scanners. You can get, there's really not the scanners, but phone apps. There are phone apps out there that you can listen to that actually, you can hear the calls going in over the radio. Look up calls all the time. There's 911 calls posted everywhere. So you can kind of look up those things. And you can do investigations, just Googling dispatchers, 911 dispatchers will give you a lot of information. But just talking to your local agencies is probably the best thing.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense, because like if you were to research something that like you live in California and this is law enforcement in Vermont, that wouldn't be good.
It'd be quite different. But the one thing about being a 911 dispatcher, there's job openings everywhere. So if you want to move to Vermont, if you want to move to Georgia, if you want to go anywhere in the United States, there are 911 dispatchers everywhere. Because we only answer for the Sheriff's Department in Ventura County. Mm-hmm. There's dispatchers up north, down south, San Diego. You can go anywhere. And there's probably openings for dispatchers at every level in every city. Now, they may pay differently. California has really high standards mm-hmm. that you have to go through a post-academy, 3 weeks of an academy for California standards. Somewhere back in Oklahoma, Nebraska, you may not have to do that. And it's maybe a very small agency. So maybe there's only two dispatchers. We have 26 or 28 dispatchers. So we're a bigger agency for us. Yeah. Ventura Police Department, they have a smaller agency. So maybe you want to work for them. So you could go anywhere and do this job probably. And that's appealing to people, that they can go anywhere. They can move anywhere and have a job.
If you're like a dispatcher here, how hard is it to transfer to like a different place?
If you were a dispatcher here, you could probably transfer pretty easily, especially California, because again, we have the high standards. You still have to go through their background investigations, and it's a pretty tedious background that you have to go through. We in for the Ventura County Sheriff's Office, the backgrounds that I went through is the same thing that the deputies go through. They go through everything you've ever done, anything financial, your schooling. They talk to your neighbors. They talk to your friends. They talk to everybody. They look at everything. They ask you if you had drinking problems, if you've been involved in narcotics, anything like that. That's all a big no-no. And even though they say, oh, yeah, you can have marijuana now, not law enforcement. That's not, you can't have that. So then you go through a psychology test with 500 questions. It's a psych exam. You have to go through that. 500 questions, everything from, I love mice. Do you love mice? Would you kill a mouse? Would you kill, you know, things like that. Yeah, this is all psychological stuff that they go through all of that, and they look into your finances. Did you have a credit card? Did you not pay that credit card? If you're in trouble paying your bills, they might ask you questions on that, so they really investigate you. Wow. And I had to put in names of neighbors that I've never really talked to. And they went and talked to those neighbors. Oh, does your neighbor have parties all the time? Do they have a lot of people over there all the time? Are they making a lot of noise, you know, arguments, anything like that? So it's very thorough. Some of the other places, not so much. And they may train you, and their training program might be 3 weeks, where ours is 6 months to a year. So if it's a smaller agency, we could probably transfer very easily. If it's a bigger agency, we might have to go through the same backgrounds with them. But we'd have a pretty good history of working under law enforcement, so they would like that. You'd probably get hired a little bit easier.
So you basically have to have, like, a clean record and have, like, nothing, and basically also know everything about everyone, I guess, in your life?
Absolutely. A clean record is a good thing to go by. Now, they may have something depending upon how old you are. If you try to apply when you're 20 years old, they might say, well, you need a little bit more life experience. So somebody who's 30, 35, 40, they may have an easier time, but they also have a long history behind them. So they're going to have to look into that. So that backgrounds may take a little bit longer. But also, if you're 35, 40, and you said, well, when I was 16, you know, I went out and did this or that, they're going to go, okay, you've matured, you're okay, we're not going to hold that against you. But if you're 20, and it was just a couple years before, they're going to say, come back maybe in another 5 years or so, and give it a try again. That's the thing I mean about life experience, having mm-hmm. those experiences that prepare you for this job.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it does. So thanks for joining us. And is there anything else you'd like to add before we go to our studio audience?
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate that people are interested in the job. It's a great job. I highly recommend it if you like it. It's not for everybody, but people who are interested, we always love the people who want to come in and see us and know about the job.
Yeah, it does seem really interesting.
Yeah, always. So Are there any questions or comments from our audience?
Hi, my name is Noel Wright, and I thought that the talk about the 911, the prank calls were honestly, that I thought that was pretty interesting. I was wondering, I read about this. I'm wondering why you had the lights on low whenever you had the, when you were in work.
Oh, would we keep our lights really low and dark in the room? Well, one thing that we have in our dispatch center is we have six screens across us, six computer screens that have lights coming out of each one of them. So we don't necessarily need the lights above us. We have so much light coming from each one of those screens, it almost hurts your eyes to have the lights on as well. So it's kind of soothing when you have the lights dimmed down low. Maybe you're not as nervous. Maybe you're a little bit calming. We all have to stay awake, so some people have that. But we also have little lights at each desk, so it helps people that need a little bit more light, that can't see as well. They can do it all on their own instead of having all those lights above us. And it really just makes for a relaxed setting. It's the same thing as, like, we have to wear uniforms to work. So when we're in our uniform, you know, it almost makes you sit straight up and makes you kind of rigid. When we have a free dress day on a weekend or something like that, it makes it a little easier. You kind of just relax a little bit more. So that's the same thing with the lights, makes us relax a little bit more.
That's very interesting. I never knew that or expected that to be the reason.
Yep.
That was very interesting.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Trent, and I was just wondering, like, what does your work schedule like look like through the week?
Well, we work 12 and a half hour shifts. So right now, I'm on as a supervisor, I start at 5:30 in the morning. I work at 5:30 in the morning, and I work all the way till 6 o'clock at night. That's my 12 and a half hour shift. I then get relieved by somebody who comes in for the dawn shift or the night shift. That person comes in at 5:30 at night, gets off at 6 o'clock in the morning. Most of the dispatchers start at 7 a.m., and they work until 7:30 at night. If you start at 7 in the evening, then you work all the way till 7:30 in the morning. That's long. So we work 12 and a half hour shifts. One good thing about it, though, we work 2 days on, 2 days off, 3 days on, 2 days off. And then, so what we call it, we have a short week. So on our short weeks, I have Monday, Tuesday off. I work Wednesday, Thursday, but then I have Friday, Saturday, Sunday off. So every other weekend, I get a 3-day weekend. Then on my long week, I work Monday, Tuesday. I have Wednesday, Thursday off, and then I work Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Now, that might change a little bit if you have overtime. If somebody's out sick, we have to cover. If somebody's on vacation, we have to cover. We have to have somebody in that chair 24 hours a day. When somebody's off or calls out sick, somebody has to come in and replace them. We have to have somebody there. We can't just go, oh, my work will be there tomorrow, because somebody always has to be there 24 hours a day because people are calling 911 all the time. But it is a good schedule because it's nice to have days off during the week, and it's also nice to have an every other weekend, a 3-day weekend.
My name is Evelyn, and I was wondering, like, have you ever gotten a call from, like, outside of Ventura County? Like, if someone, like, lives in Ventura County and they call 911 but they're outside, does it still direct it to you?
Most of the time with the technology now, if you're calling from anywhere in Ventura County, it comes to us. The one thing about that is that people will call for somebody in Los Angeles or, say, San Diego. They're calling for a loved one in San Diego who's maybe having a heart attack. So they dial 911 because they say, call 911. But then that comes to us. Well, we can't help them in San Diego because we're not in San Diego. So then we have to go through the process of referring them to somebody down there, finding a phone number for them, transferring them down there to San Diego. And so that's kind of the misperception. People think they're calling 911, that it calls, you know, above everybody, that 911 answers for everything and we can do everything. We're only handling the emergencies and the calls here in Ventura County. So that does happen sometimes. The only thing, if somebody's out of town and they dial 911, that they'll get us if they're on a voice over system, so that it automatically just comes to their local agency through their computer. So they may call 911 and they're not even here. So then again, we have to refer them out. So it's always important that the first information that we get from anybody calling is their location. Where are you? Or where's the emergency if they're calling for somebody somewhere else, so that we can get them to the proper agency quickly.
Hi, I'm Lila. I was wondering, have you ever gotten a call from like a babysitter who's babysitting like young kids who hear something but doesn't know what it is?
Yes, we've actually gotten that quite often. Because they're usually maybe somebody's in a home that they're not very comfortable with, they're not familiar with. So they call 911 or they can call the business line too, and we'll answer it and handle it the same way. A lot of times that babysitter doesn't know the address. So it's better if they call 911. If they call 911, then we're from a landline phone, we're going to know that address. That's one good thing. If you're babysitting, you're out somewhere, or you're driving on a road that you don't know, maybe out of state, that you look around and you find out where you are. If you're a babysitter, you should know the address, because if you have to call 911, if the child falls off the bunk bed or ends up in the pool for some reason, and you need to know, you know, you have to call 911 and you have to get help there quickly, know the address of where you're calling from. Sometimes they'll hear something funny, and we'll send deputies out if they hear a noise. Maybe it's an animal in the backyard, but maybe it's somebody prowling. So it could really be an emergency. So we'll send deputies, knowing that we don't know what this is and you're not comfortable with it. We'll stay on the line with you until somebody gets there and helps you and make sure that you're okay.
Hi, my name is Mia, and I was wondering, how many prank calls and regular calls do you get a day?
We average, I don't know the exact number, but we average probably, on the average, a slow day, maybe 300 to 500 calls a day. And now that's business calls, that's 911 calls, then that's in a 24-hour period. So 300 to 500 calls a day. One of the days that goes crazy is on 4th of July. 4th of July, that doubles, triples, then we're talking 700 to 1,000 calls, maybe 400 to 500 calls in a 2-hour period, because people are calling reporting fireworks. And it's 4th of July, so it's going to happen. But we expect that. Another time when we received an outrageous amount of calls was when the actress Naya Rivera passed away. We were getting calls all over the country. They were calling in because people were concerned she went missing for a while. So people were calling us every minute, giving us information that they thought was vital, concerned about her. Are we looking, or what are we doing? You know, you'll get, it just depends on the events. But on the average, it's usually probably 300 to 500, but that can go up and down just depending upon what's going on and what the circumstances are. If there's flooding, if there's fires happening, our calls usually double or triple.
Again, thank you so much for joining us, Debbie, and talking with us today about being a dispatcher. And a big thanks to all our listeners and followers. I'm Daya Carolyn.
With Mamie Bain.
For KA19, signing off.